This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
There are interesting stories about Common Core and standardized testing all over the country. But if you want real entertainment, you have to look closely at Florida.
Those are the types of inconsistencies that create a concern for the integrity of the testing environment.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll hear how developing education standards and valid evaluations has been a comedy of errors in the Sunshine State. We'll also see how another southern state, North Carolina, is trying to find ways to pay its best teachers. And we'll spend an academic minute matching the personalities of students and teachers for better early education. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge.
We want Florida standards, not national standards.
That's Florida Governor Rick Scott last year talking about a new set of standards for Florida educators. Florida was one of the states instrumental in forming the Common Core standards. But the Florida legislature is very conservative and very Republican, and Common Core has become a non-starter in states with those conditions. So a new set of standards, close to the Common Core but with some changes, was established in the state, called Florida Standards. But when they established the standards, they didn't come up with tests for the standards. Dr. Dana Boddy, an instructor and math program coordinator at the University of West Florida, talked about teachers' frustration with the situation.
I think we're all just sitting around waiting to see what's happening. Right now, the changes are being implemented or decided on how we're going to move forward with this. And teachers are anxiously anticipating what assessment will my children be given, especially since, you know, they're judged based on how their students do. It would be nice to have an idea what they're going to be expected to do. So we're just sitting around waiting for it to happen and hope. Hopefully they'll decide soon so that we can move forward and develop the things we need to prepare teachers and be effective in the classroom.
I asked Dr. Boddy if she thought some school districts would just ditch the whole thing and come up with their own sets of standards.
It's so caught up the way that they tie funding to what you do. The state's not going to let that happen. You're going to follow the state standards because it's going to be directly connected to any funding you receive from the state. So I don't see any district jumping out there wanting to take a financial leap and being independent.
Eventually, a vendor for the Florida Standards Test was chosen, and beginning in March, the new tests were introduced. The exams were given online, and throughout the state, it was a disaster. Students were unable to log into the exam, and some who could were tossed offline mid-test. Here's a report I did on that situation back on March 11th, 2015.
My heart really, really goes out to our students.
Santa Rosa County School Superintendent Tim Rosdick and school officials around the state have been dealing with lots of frustrated students as well as teachers for the last week and a half. Last week began with students around the state being unable to sign into the test. Those problems were solved by midweek, but then other problems developed.
We would have system freezes. It would delay their progress within the test, sometime up to 10, 15 minutes. Then it would re-engage. Sometimes when they re-engage, their work would be present. Sometimes it had disappeared. We even had a situation where students completed the test and began to submit the test and it not be able to submit. So the student would have to log back off and then log on. And we had students whose data was lost completely, and then students whose data was there. Just a lot of inconsistencies, and from a superintendent standpoint, those are the types of inconsistencies that create a concern for the integrity of the testing environment.
Rosdick says that by the end of the week, all but a dozen of the students in Santa Rosa County who tried to take the test were able to complete the test. In Escambia County, 8th and 9th graders were allowed to take the test late last week, but not 10th graders. The district allowed those students to wait until this week, giving the state and the test vendor time to iron out any remaining problems. Escambia County Superintendent Malcolm Thomas says that's exactly what happened.
We started testing 10th graders on Monday, and at this point, the bulk of those are completed. I think Thursday was a turning point. Beginning Thursday, maybe an hour into the test, things began to stabilize, the system began to function, and since that time it's been relatively stable. Now, we have had a few isolated instances where students, you know, have normal technical glitches, people get knocked off the internet, that kind of stuff. That's going to be pretty much expected for any kind of online internet type testing. But the major problems that we were having earlier last week, they've certainly dissipated, and it's a much more stable system at this point.
But that system will soon be put to a tougher test. In April, another round of exams will be given to a much larger group of students.
The load will be very different in April because in the writing test, we were only testing grades 8, 9, and 10. When you get to April, we'll be testing reading, mathematics, science, grades 3 through 10. That's going to dramatically increase the load during the test window.
The superintendents are concerned with how these tests affect the students, but also how they affect the district as a whole. Several weeks ago, a group of school officials from around the state met with Governor Rick Scott and expressed concerns about the testing platform. They asked that district grades be frozen for a year and make this year's exam a dry run of sort. But Santa Rosa County's Tim Rosdick says that didn't happen.
This would be a good test for us to give as a baseline, as a field test, as a benchmark test, and then let it really start counting for all of those things next year. It just made common sense to us. Unfortunately, that is not the case. We are still moving full speed ahead with having all of those parameters count, unless, of course, the legislature takes some action over the next 5.5 weeks.
For the time being, all students who need to take a test have taken that test, but all eyes will be back on the schools in April for the next batch of exams to see if the system can hold up on the increased load. The good news is that in April, there were few, if any, glitches in the system, and the testing process went smoothly. This would seem to be a nice place for a happy ending, but no, this is Florida, so that's not going to happen just yet. During the Florida state legislative session, questions arose over the validity of the tests. Republican State Senator Alan Hayes openly questioned the tests and demanded legislation be passed that would assure the tests were valid. It says an independent verification of the psychometric validity of the new FSA must be completed before the state issues 2015 A to F school grades or finalizes teacher evaluations, both to be based on FSA test data. This independent entity would need to have its work completed by September 1st. The problem there is school in Florida is ended for the year and students need their final grades. The solution? The test results have been thrown out, at least for this school year. I spoke about this new situation with Malcolm Thomas. He's the school superintendent of Escambia County, Florida.
Well, we've known all along that the FSA, that's the Florida Standards Assessment, the typical assessments for English, language, arts, and math for grades 3 through 10, we knew we would not get results on those tests until later in the fall. The surprise was the end-of-course exams for the upper-level math courses, that's Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, we thought we would get some results on those EOCs. We've learned now because of legislation that requires a validity study to be completed before the scores can be released, that those scores will also be held in abeyance until such time as that validity study is complete. What makes that particularly a situation for high school students is those tests are tied to their course grade. It counts as 30% of the student's grade for algebra, geometry, algebra 2. And we've been seeking guidance, and when I say we, I'm talking about every superintendent, every school district in the state of Florida. We've been seeking guidance from the Department of Education since the legislation passed about what does this mean and what flexibility will you provide. Earlier this week, I did receive correspondence from the Commissioner of Education that indicated districts are going to have flexibility in terms of how they deal with that situation, and we're going to really give our teachers and students as much flexibility as we can. It's not their problem that they're in this situation just days before school is out. So we're going to allow teachers that we're going to give an exam at the end to use that exam to count. If they're doing an end of the quarter exam and that teacher says it's their discretion and they believe that's the best way to measure the student, we'll use that exam as their semester exam. The students have already taken a lot of tests, and so we didn't want teachers or students to be in a position where people felt they had to do something extra to do another test.
So this is going more teacher by teacher more than school by school, right?
But class by class. It's, you know, each teacher for their class. It'll be fair for the class. Whatever they do in their algebra class, they'll do for all students. But because each student, each teacher in course may be in a little different position, given the time we have, we just don't have time to try to manage that. We're going to leave it to the discretion of the teacher. They know best. They're in that class each day. They know what they're trying to accomplish.
I imagine this means a lot more to, say, a junior than it would to a freshman because of where the transcripts have to go.
Well, you know, a grade's a grade. Every student wants that report card grade. They want to know how they've done. And once you mark that grade, whether you're in the ninth grade or the 11th grade, it's on your transcript, that four-year transcript for high school. And it's going to affect that cumulative GPA that'll follow you through the end of high school. So I would say it's equally important for all of the students.
Once this information is released, will that then go on the student's transcript, or are these tests just done?
No, that once the information is released, if the tests are held to be valid and the state eventually releases a score, it'll become part of a student record. It'll be in their file because it's a test that they have taken and they have a score. But we're going to use the flexibility we've been provided and let the teachers go ahead and resolve the grade issues for the report cards now. That way we're not having students hung up or thinking in the future that somehow we're going to go back and backtrack on what we've told them in the past. We need to resolve it so we can move forward. In a lot of cases, this may affect what course you'll be in next year. If you've been doing work that is passing quality, and that average looks like you passed, and all your tests in the course look like you passed, we're going to let you pass. And we're not going to sit back and wait for some state exam that may or may not be released.
Does this finally put testing in this school year to bed, at least for this school year?
It does. Well, in terms of students and teachers, I mean, there's still a lot down the road. If the tests are deemed to be valid, then there's a lot of work on the Department of Education's part. They'll take all the data. They'll then have to decide where's the cut score, because remember, we don't know the passing score on these tests yet. That hasn't occurred. All that activity would occur in the fall, and then once the passing score is determined, somewhere around November, December, you may have school grades based on the data, again, if all of that passes through the validity check.
This has been such a year for tests and changes. Does it look like things are beginning to settle down and you have a little bit clearer picture about what's to be done next school year?
Well, not really. I mean, we really don't, because you have to really settle this whole field test issue and how the test was administered and what it meant. And until we get answers on that from the validity study, we don't have a good handle on where we go next year. This should have always been a field test. Superintendents have been very consistent with that for the last 3 years. We felt like all the rules of psychometrics were being broken. They were trying to push this along too fast and force it along before teachers and students really had a test that was ready for prime time. Some things you just can't short circuit.
So, to be continued after a little bit of a summer break.
Yes, sir.
And that's where we're going to leave things right now. As students and teachers break for the summer, school district superintendents wait to see what surprises might be waiting for them in the fall. Still to come, we'll hear how another southern state is struggling with how to reward its best teachers. That story's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. North Carolina ranks 46th in the country in teacher salaries. This is not news to anyone who follows education in the state. It's a reality that has long-term implications for teacher retention efforts, university teacher education programs, and even future job growth. It also has political ramifications. And that's why Republicans in charge of state government have spent months discussing ways to pay teachers more money. Dave DeWitt explores the many ideas the state's General Assembly discussed last year on how to pay the best teachers more money.
This is an issue with way more than just two sides. To illustrate how convoluted and complicated paying teachers has become, listen to this fairly simple argument from Terry Stoops, the Director of Education Studies at the conservative John Locke Foundation.
Frankly, it's unfair to our highest performing teachers. I mean, there's no reason why the Teacher of the Year in North Carolina should make as much as any other teacher.
Now, here's an actual, real-life North Carolina Teacher of the Year who, in a free market, would get paid more.
First of all, I don't think as North Carolina Teacher of the Year that I am the best teacher. I think I simply represent a lot of the great teaching that I've seen in my school and in my district, and this year traveling the state, that I've seen across the state. So I think it's very hard to classify who the best teacher is.
Karen Dickerson would prefer that entire schools of teachers get paid more based on performance, not just individual teachers. She believes this would create an atmosphere of cooperation, not competition. But a competition is exactly what the legislature set up when it voted last year to eliminate a teacher's right to due process. They replaced tenure with a plan that directed school districts to identify the top 25% of teachers and offer them longer contracts and relatively small bonuses if they agreed to give up their due process rights. It was one of many legislative actions that drew protests from teachers, like this one outside Durham's Riverside High School in December. Hearing the political backlash, elected officials have spent the last several months coming up with all manner of plans to increase teacher pay. Governor Pat McCrory and legislative leaders Phil Berger and Tom Tillis appeared at McCrory's old high school 2 months ago and announced a plan to pay beginning teachers more.
Well, I'm pleased to announce that over the next 2 years, this team has got an agreement in which we will increase by nearly 14% over the next 2 years the base pay for teachers to $35,000 per year.
That salary increase would go to all teachers in the first few steps of what is known as the teacher salary schedule. Paying teachers for years of experience has been the model for about 100 years. Local districts can add some money, and teachers used to be able to earn more when they got advanced degrees or earned national board certification. In other words, if the Teacher of the Year is in her 10th year of teaching, another teacher, maybe even a bad one, who's been at it 20 years, likely makes a lot more money. That, Senator Jerry Tillman says, must change.
What I would like to see is those high-achieving teachers, here's another wrinkle to it, you get a step. You might even get two steps in 1 year. And if you're not achieving, you may stay on the step you're on, or you could lose a step.
Tillman has become the Republicans' leading voice on education issues. A former school superintendent turned majority whip, he's for local control of schools and hates regulations that tie the hands of administrators who want to remake their schools. And before you think this is some sort of easy Republican versus Democrat, free market versus socialism political fight, consider this. President Barack Obama also favors teacher merit pay and made it a cornerstone of his Race to the Top grant competition.
It's time to start rewarding good teachers. Stop making excuses for bad ones. It's time to demand results from government at every level. It's time to prepare every child, everywhere in America, to outcompete any worker, anywhere in the world.
Well, I welcome you to today's meeting of the Legislator Effectiveness Compensation Task Force. Mr. Co-Chair, you have any comments?
Only that I didn't know it was a legislator effectiveness. We might be in trouble, Senator.
Senator Tillman may have made a slight error with the name of the Educator Effectiveness and Compensation Task Force, but the purpose of the group is quite clear. Upend the teacher step schedule and replace it with a merit pay system. The Republican-dominated task force has met three times over the past 2 months, listening to administrators and teachers, researchers and advocates.
And we just asked the question, can we observe that a teacher who receives a master's degree becomes more effective in the classroom? And we can't find that in the data.
Recent studies indicate that advanced degrees, including master's and doctoral degrees, hold a positive impact for student achievement.
Duke economics professor Jacob Vigder and Keith Poston with the Public School Forum of North Carolina weren't the only ones sending mixed messages. Legislators heard about Florida's merit pay plan that produced almost no positive results, and the Washington, D.C. plan that fired hundreds of teachers but raised student test scores dramatically. Throughout the meetings, Senator Tillman would periodically grab the microphone and offer his personal thoughts, like this one, on how to implement the D.C. plan here.
I'm hearing everything from paying them more won't work to paying them more works. I sort of have a feeling if it'll work in Washington, D.C., it'll work in Pisgah, North Carolina.
Of course, Washington, D.C. has an almost bottomless supply of young people wanting to teach, something that's not the case in Pisgah or Northampton County or Lumberton, for that matter. And there may be other reasons merit pay programs for teachers won't work here. Daniel Pink is an author who writes about the changing workforce. In a presentation at the recent Emerging Issues Forum, he made the point, sarcastically, that financial rewards for complex jobs like teaching won't work.
School teachers, by their very choice of profession, are signaling to the world, money is not the most important thing in my life. And so, let's try to motivate them with money.
Beyond the motivation issues, many educators believe a merit pay plan implemented now would be built on shifting sands. Jim Key is an assistant superintendent in the Durham Public Schools.
I think it's the first time it's happened in my 30 years where the standards changed, the tests themselves changed, and the expectations for what it would take for a student to be deemed proficient changed, and the bar was raised. We've gone through those three things before, but never, I don't recall us ever going through them all simultaneously.
The legislature is highly likely to make dramatic, long-term changes to how we pay the state's 95,000 or so teachers. Dave DeWitt, North Carolina Public Radio.
If young children and their teachers share personality traits, it pretty much works out for all involved. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Children who are shy or disruptive in school may be at risk for poor academic achievement. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College, and today on the Academic Minute, Sandy McLowry, a professor of counseling psychology at New York University, shares the results of several research studies that point to the benefits of tailoring parental and teaching strategies to children's personalities.
One size fits all doesn't work with children. Instead, matching teacher and parenting strategies to children's different personalities is much more effective. I make that assertion after insights into children's temperament, an intervention that I developed was tested in three randomized clinical trials. Insights has teacher, parent, and classroom programs that work together to support kindergarten and first grade children. The intervention features four temperaments: social, shy, industrious, and high maintenance. Teachers and parents learn strategies that match a child's particular temperament. At the same time, children participating in classroom activities use puppets representing each temperament to resolve daily dilemmas. My research team and I recently tested the efficacy of insights in 122 classrooms in 22 urban elementary schools. The schools were randomly assigned to insights or a control group. Our findings show that children enrolled in insights experienced significantly faster growth in math, reading, and sustained attention compared to those in the control group. In addition, although children participating in insights decreased in behavior problems, the children in the control group exhibited increased behavior problems. We also found additional effects for children whose temperaments are shy or high maintenance. Those children are at risk for additional problems at school.
That was Sandy McLowry of New York University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.